Wednesday, August 11, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you and your family and friends are all staying healthy out there. Hey, if you are in the Denver metro area, hope you can breathe right now. I don't know what's going on in the rest of the country right now, but here in the Mile High City in Denver, we are getting insane amounts of smoke, and it's from fires that aren't even our own. We're getting smoke from fires up in Washington and California and Idaho, and all this smoke is coming down and just settling above Denver. In fact, over the weekend, we had the worst polluted city, not in the country, in the world. On the planet, we had the worst polluted city. So hopefully, if you are here in Denver, you know, things are starting to clear out and you're starting to be able to breathe a little better, because that has been a little rough. But we are happy to have you here with us today. And you know, today is actually a national day of the year that we need to discuss a little bit, because National Presidential Joke Day is observed today on August 11th. And this day recognizes the humor that is often found and yet not often appreciated in the highest office here in this country, the United States. Now, we know a lot of times there are blunders that take place by presidents. And sometimes we'll take a look back at, you know, some presidents falling down the stairs or even falling up the stairs. And sometimes those things are pretty awkward. But while in the moment, the commander in chief, they don't really find those things all that funny. But then later, we end up laughing a little more at them. Now, National Presidential Joke Day began back on August 11th in 1984. And during a sound check for his Saturday evening radio broadcast, President Ronald Reagan joked, just during sound check, "My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes." However, someone leaked the recording to the general public. CBS would actually broadcast it on their Monday evening report, and critics were blasting Reagan as being unpresidential. Meanwhile, others thought the joke was just kind of harmless and just kind of thought he was being funny. So now, on August 11th of each year, the sitting president is supposed to drop a joke for National Presidential Joke Day. So today, I mean, can someone please remind current U.S. President Joseph Biden that it is National Presidential Joke Day? In fact, can someone please remind Joe Biden that he is actually our president? And you know, I've noticed, brief side note, that no one seems to be making all that many jokes about Joe Biden. I mean, usually Saturday Night Live is like spoofing the president. SNL won't even touch Joe Biden. I don't know what that's about. I don't know why that is. I realize that today is a day for Joe to try to crack his best joke, but man, where have we gone as a country when we can't even crack a joke about our commander-in-chief? That's kind of sad, isn't it? Because, I mean, we need to be able to laugh at ourselves. Now, maybe it's just this. Maybe people just don't want to make fun of the guy. Like, we feel kind of bad. It's like making fun of your grandpa or whatever. You know, some things are slipping. He's not doing so well. Maybe everyone just kind of feels bad about making jokes at Joe Biden's expense. I mean, I do. Because he doesn't really seem to know what's going on right now. He's just out there propped up with a few sticks and telling us how dangerous the pandemic is for our children in schools.
Howdy, kids! I know what you're thinking. We're all perfectly safe in this classroom, right?
Right! Right.
Wrong! Just about everything you see in here is a potential hazard. Let me show you something.
But far be it from me to make fun of an old senile man. I think we're a little better than that here at the Dose. You're not going to catch us making any sort of jokes like that today on National Presidential Joke Day. Not here, kids. We don't stoop that low. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us, I don't know, your favorite presidential joke. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosesports. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you want to talk sports. Maybe you've got a question that is sports related. We do hear from a number of listeners just asking questions. Hey, what did you think of this? What did you think of that? Why is this sport doing this? Why are they doing that? feel free to drop us a line. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week and checking out some of the new articles that are going up there. I am doing my best to release a Daily Doses every Tuesday. It usually has more of a local slant on local sports here in Denver, but it could be about anything. Meanwhile, our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, is posting a new article every Thursday. He talked a little bit about the MLB trade deadline this past week. He's got some good stuff over there. Plus, you can also see the video portion of the podcast. You can check out the audio portion of the podcast. Make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com and subscribe over there as well. You'll get a notification every time something new comes out. And as long as we're all still doing that online shopping, which we know we are, be sure you pick up some Daily Dose gear over at TeePublic.com. You can get t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies. You can pick whatever color you want, and we have a number of logos to choose from. But you can also get things like coffee mugs and cell phone covers. Make sure you stop by TeePublic.com and get your Daily Dose gear. Hey, today on the show, I have a few news stories that we want to talk about this week. But then we are going to start ramping up for football season today. And we're going to do that today by looking at the most important position in all of sports. But let's jump into some breaking news first. And kids, first up, it looks like I'm going to have to talk some Major League Baseball this week. And I'm going to warn you right now, it isn't going to be good. Because the Miami Marlins were in Denver over the weekend to face the Colorado Rockies. This was on Sunday. And during the ninth inning, a fan was heard yelling something in the ninth inning as Marlins outfielder Lewis Brinson stepped up to the plate. Now, when whatever was yelled, Marlins play-by-play announcer Paul Severino immediately apologized to listeners, stating that someone was yelling a racial slur. Oh dear. This isn't going to be good, folks. Immediately after the game, the Colorado Rockies issued a statement on this, I don't know, Trump-supporting, hood-wearing racist that was yelling the ultimate racial slur like it was nothing. He was just yelling it out. Here's what the Colorado Rockies had to say. The Colorado Rockies are disgusted at the racial slur by a fan directed at the Marlins' Lewis Brinson during the ninth inning of today's game. Although the subject was not identified prior to the end of the game, the Rockies are still investigating this incident. The Rockies have zero tolerance for any form of racism or discrimination, and any fan using derogatory language of any kind will be ejected and banned from Coors Field. Hey, they're taking a hard line on this, folks. The Major League Baseball Players Association weighed in as well. Association Executive Director Tony Clark released a statement later on Sunday saying that racism will not be tolerated on or off the field at any time. Here is what Tony Clark had to say. While many are truly committed to respect and equality for all, the abhorrent racial animus displayed today highlights that there is still work to be done. Well, the investigation was underway. And after team officials looked at the video evidence and they interviewed the racist fan and they interviewed all the people sitting around that blatant racist, because, I mean, why didn't the people sitting around him react in any way whatsoever? It was found that the guilty party, the hood-wearing racist, was yelling, "Dinger!" He was actually yelling at the Rockies' stupid purple dinosaur mascot to come over to him. Apparently, Dinger was a few rows away. And then, the idiot up in the radio booth, far, far away actually from where this was taking place, mistook the word Dinger for another word instead and put it out there to everyone that that's what was said. And suddenly, social media was on fire with people crucifying this poor dude that was just trying to talk to a stupid purple dinosaur. Now, again, I hate to point this out, but did it not occur to anyone involved that if this guy was so blatantly screaming a racist word like that, the people around him might react a little bit? I mean, if nothing else, you'd see some looks, maybe a call to security, maybe a, "Hey, what are you doing? Don't be yelling that." No one said anything. They were all fine. And then when it all ended, come to find out why, because he wasn't saying that. Now look, I realize that we are all so easily triggered these days. But as we talk about every week here on The Dose, can we please apply some sort of logic to these situations? Like just a touch of common sense? And I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm offended that anyone would ever call for that stupid Barney the Dinosaur-looking mascot of the Colorado Rockies. But come on, people. Let's be smarter than this. And I think the solution here that we have to come to is, one, let's maybe wait to pass judgment a little bit. I think that's pretty important. And two, I think we need to probably cancel Barney, or Dinger, whatever his name is. Because that name is clearly problematic. And we know, in this era specifically, problematic gets you canceled, no matter how ludicrous it is. Hey, that was a little too close for comfort. Sorry, Dinger. You're going to just have to be known by Barney now. Hopefully there's no trademark implications there, but we're just going to have to change your name because it made some people a little uncomfortable to hear a word that wasn't the word that they thought was a word, but it was close to a word, so they're just going to say it was the word. Wow, have we gone over the cliff here in the United States? You know, we lost a great coach from the world of college football this week as Bobby Bowden, the longtime Florida State football coach who ranks second all-time in Division I wins, passed away on Sunday morning. Bobby was 91. You know, Bobby Bowden was diagnosed with a terminal medical condition back in July. He didn't want to disclose what that condition was at the time, but then his son Terry later told reporters that it was pancreatic cancer. Bowden is second only to Penn State's Joe Paterno in all-time Division I college football wins. He compiled 377 wins across a 44-year coaching career. He coached at Samford, which was once known as Howard College. He coached at West Virginia, and of course, he had so much success at Florida State. Bowden won two NCAA national championships with Florida State in 93 and then again in 99, and he led the Seminoles to an NCAA record of 14 consecutive seasons, finishing in the top five of the AP football poll. Really impressive stuff. Bowden recorded just one losing season at Florida State back in 76, his first year at the university. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2006 and retired in 2009 at the age of 80. That's amazing. He had 28 straight postseason appearances with Florida State. But I'll tell you something else that Bobby Bowden did. Not many people are going to talk about this. Not many people are going to recognize this. But Bobby Bowden did something else for college football. Bobby Bowden brought phrases like consarn it and dadgummit. And we're going to miss that. I mean, nowadays, we have these polished coaches. We have guys like Nick Saban and Lincoln Riley and Kirby Smart. They're not going to say, I don't know, anything grandfatherly. They're not going to say anything that you're going to go, I don't know why, but that just kind of made me feel good. But I miss the days when we had coaches like Bobby Bowden. I mean, even guys like Roy Williams. I miss the days when we had coaches that sounded like Foghorn Leghorn.
Now what? I say, what's the big idea bashing me on the noggin with a rolling pin?
And we are going to miss Bobby Bowden without question. Finally, the 2021 Tokyo Olympics came to a close on Sunday. The United States did actually manage to win the medal count 113-88 over China. We also scraped past China in the gold medal count 39-38. But let's be real. This was a very, very weird Olympic Games. I mean, remember, it was pushed to this odd year because of the pandemic. It was supposed to take place last summer. There were no fans in the stands. Gymnast Simone Biles was deemed a hero for not performing, and I'm not going to bash her, but it's kind of weird that in this country we would promote you as a hero for not doing something. That's a little bit odd to me. I mean, it was a weird year. No one seemed to be watching on TV. The ratings set an all-time low record. They were horrible, and as usual, there are a number of reasons for the poor ratings. For one, we're still in this pandemic thing and everything's kind of weird. People just aren't watching that many sports right now. Of course, it's in the summer, so people are going out and doing other things. Some people, I know, felt that some American Olympic athletes got a little too political. And as we know, you can get woke if you want to, but you will go broke doing so. And so that seemed to turn off a lot of sports fans as well. But there were some things to feel good about. I mean, the women's volleyball team found a way to win the gold medal. They had to bounce back from a loss. The women's basketball team kept rolling. They still haven't lost. They keep winning every year. But I want to talk briefly about another team. A team that gets a lot of attention, and for the most part, a team that gets attention for, well, mostly the wrong reasons. I want to talk about the men's basketball team. After losing twice in exhibition play, and then losing to France in the Olympics, our Team USA men's basketball team bounced back and won the gold medal, getting some revenge on France, beating them in the title game by 5 points. And while I understand that the NBA players are entitled spoiled brats, I get that. We know that. I do want to discuss one thing. Team USA, like I said, beat France by 5 in the championship game. And afterward, you heard a lot of chatter in sports circles. You saw it on social media a lot. People were very quick to point out, well, yeah, Team USA won, but they had to send their dream team to do so. Okay, I get it. We send our NBA stars to the Olympics. Although, let's be fair, this group was hardly a dream team. It wasn't like we were sending Steph and LeBron or anything like that. But can we stop acting like other countries aren't sending their dream teams? Like, France isn't rolling out their amateurs to play against our pros. Neither is Russia or China or Australia. Every country is sending their pros. Please remember this. This is why we started sending pros, because literally every other country was doing it first. I know we like to bash the United States right now for pretty much everything, but I'm not really sure we should be bashed for doing what every other country in the world is doing. Now, would I like to see Team USA just send players under like 25 years of age? Yes, I think that would be really cool. But again, no one else is doing that. I'm not sure why we here in the United States are held to a different standard than the other countries. They're sending their adult pros. So we're doing the exact same thing. Then again, most of the people that are doing all the whining are actually Americans whining about ourselves. Big shocker there, right? Yeah, I know. You're stunned right now. I'll let you get back in your chair so that you can listen to the rest of the podcast. I'm not sure it's wrong of us to do what every other country is doing. It's just that we're a lot better at basketball than every other country. Okay, coming back. The football season is coming. We are beginning to prep for it a little bit today. We are going to be looking at the most important position in sports, and we are going to see just how each NFL team ranks in that department. So this week on The Dose, we are beginning to prepare for the coming NFL season, and we are trying to get a feel for which teams are actually going to be contenders before the season gets here. And one way to do that is to look at the most important position in sports. Yes, I am talking about the NFL quarterback. I mean, they touch the ball on every single play. They are the one put in charge of not turning the ball over. They have to read the defenses. They have to get the offense into the correct play. They have to bring confidence to the huddle. They have to move the chains. They have to score points in crunch time. And yes, we know they get too much credit. They probably get too much blame. But today, we are going to look at each starting quarterback in the NFL and take a look at how much confidence their fan base currently has in them. And then we're going to take those tinted fan glasses off and tell you what the true confidence scale should be. Yeah, you'll be surprised at how much those two numbers can differ. So let's jump in. We're going to plow through every single team in the NFL. And let's start off in the AFC East, where the defending division champions are the Buffalo Bills for a change. For the first time since 2008, a team other than the New England Patriots won this division. And a big part of Buffalo's success was no doubt thanks to third-year quarterback Josh Allen. Josh Allen threw for 37 touchdowns while leading Buffalo to the AFC Championship game. So going into this season, how much confidence should Bills fans have in young Josh Allen? Well, knowing Bills fans and how they like to light things on fire and jump onto tables, we know they without a doubt are coming in with a perfect 10 for Josh Allen, and it's understandable. Allen can make all the plays, but I would offer this caveat going into this year. Last season, the Bills played a pretty soft schedule. This year could be tougher. I don't think Allen's going to crash, but I would more realistically set him at about a 7 or an 8. That feels more realistic than the 10 or 11 or 19 that Bills fans are going to give him. The Miami Dolphins showed some life last season. They went 10-6. They just missed the playoffs. This year, the Dolphins have to feel great about the job head coach Brian Flores is doing. He is getting the Dolphins to play good, physical, mistake-free football. And this team should be in playoff contention after a very solid draft. Here's the question. Can second-year quarterback Tua Tagovailoa prove that he is truly a franchise quarterback like Miami is kind of making him? Well, I believe if you ask the average Finns fan how confident they are in young Tua, they'd probably give you like a 7, maybe even an 8. He's going to have more talent this year around him, but I would probably scooch that down to maybe a 5. I mean, keep in mind, Tua averaged just 6 yards per attempt last year. That's not very good. He may be okay eventually, but I would imagine he's going to have some growing pains. The Dolphins need more weapons to truly make Tua better, and until they get those, he's going to be kind of average. Maybe just a shade above average. The New England Patriots found themselves in an unfamiliar position last year. They missed the playoffs for the first time since 2008. Without Tom Brady, the Patriots offense was significantly below average as Cam Newton threw just 8 touchdowns while throwing 10 interceptions. So the Patriots used a first round draft pick to draft Alabama quarterback Mac Jones. They are hoping he is going to be the guy to take over, but here's the problem. It sounds like in training camp, Cam's playing pretty well so far. And Jones is struggling to pick up the Bill Belichick playbook. So if this does end up being Cam's team for one more year, how confident will Patriot fans be? Well, let's be honest. Patriot fans think Bill Belichick can buff out a turd into a smooth, shiny diamond, so they'll go into the season with a confidence rating of like 5 or 6 in Cam Newton. Unfortunately, I don't think Cam can throw the ball downfield. Not for an entire season. So he may start the season strong, but I bet he won't finish that way. Because his shoulder is a serious problem. He can't push the ball down the field. I would make Cam's number more like a 2. And if he has a bad game or two, it's going to get worse. Because Patriot fans are going to want to see the rookie. We finish out the AFC East with a team that has been horrible for decades. But they might finally be showing at least some small signs for improvement. The New York Jets haven't made the postseason since 2010, and a good portion of that problem has been due to their quarterback play. Since 2010, I mean, think of some of the guys that the Jets have sent out there to be quarterback. Geno Smith, Josh McCown, and of course Sam Darnold. Those guys didn't help much. Well, the Jets went and they hired former San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh to be their head coach. And he just might turn things around. He has that kind of attitude. He gets his players to buy in, and they play hard for him. Then the Jets went out and they drafted BYU quarterback Zach Wilson, who made a number of pro scouts fall in love with him at his workouts last year. So Jets fans have to have the most hope they have had in well over a decade. And they would probably rank young Zach Wilson a 7, maybe even an 8 on their confidence scale. But we should probably reel that in. Weigh in. Because, I mean, Zach didn't play against the greatest competition at BYU. And the NFL is going to be a big jump for him. And also, the Jets still have a lot of holes on that roster. I would probably lower that number to about a 3, maybe a 4, at least for a year or two. And then we'll see how he does. We move over to the NFC East, which was really, really bad last year. I mean, the NFC East sent a team to the playoffs that had a losing record. So is this division going to be any better this year? I have my doubts, but I guess we'll see. First up, we have the Dallas Cowboys, who were extremely disappointing last season. They went just 6-10 after losing starting quarterback Dak Prescott for the season to that broken ankle in week 5. And remember, there were people, so-called experts, picking the Dallas Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl last year. And then they lost Dak, and it all went sideways. But it wasn't just Dak Prescott, because the Dallas defense pooped the bed, and the season went south real fast. Well, now Dak is back. And you know, expectations always run high in Big D. Most fans would probably give Dak a 7, maybe even an 8, if he's fully recovered from that ankle. Unfortunately, there's some bad news, because Dak now has an injured shoulder too, and they are saying it might be more serious than the Cowboys front office is letting on. If that's the case, Dak probably needs to be downgraded to more like a 5 or a 6, because he has the shoulder problem. And remember, we still haven't really seen how the ankle's holding up. Dak needs to be healthy if the Dallas Cowboys are going to do anything this year. The New York Giants also dealt with a number of injuries last season. They lost running back Saquon Barkley clear back in week 2. The Giants also went 6-10, and after such a promising rookie season, quarterback Daniel Jones took a pretty big step backward. Jones went 5-9 as a starter. He threw nearly as many interceptions as he did touchdowns. So the Giants set out this offseason to give Jones some more weapons, and they did accomplish that. Sort of. They went and signed Detroit Lions wide receiver Kenny Golladay. They drafted Florida playmaker Kadarius Toney, and Saquon Barkley should be back. So while Giants fans may have lost some faith last year in Daniel Jones, they might be ranking him like a 3 or 4 on the confidence scale. I'd probably bump that up to more like a 5. Here's the bad news, though. The Giants did not upgrade their offensive line. So Jones had better get rid of that ball real fast, or he might actually die in the pocket. The Philadelphia Eagles had a 2020 season that most of their fans, I'm sure, would love to forget. They looked like they had enough talent to win the division going into the season, and instead, they finished dead last with a 4-11-1 record. Starting quarterback Carson Wentz got shipped out of town. Super Bowl winning head coach Doug Peterson is no more. The Eagles went instead and hired a new head coach in weirdo Nick Sirianni. And they're going to go with quarterback Jalen Hurts. Now, Hurts started 4 games last year. He went just 1-3, which will have those nasty fans in Philly ranking him probably a 2 or 3 as far as confidence. But Jalen Hurts didn't look that bad. He proved he can be a threat with his arm. He proved he can be a threat with his legs. He could become a reliable starter with new offensive coordinator Shane Steichen, who comes to Philly after helping Justin Herbert become the league's offensive rookie of the year last year with the Los Angeles Chargers. So I won't go crazy and bump Jalen Hurts up too much, but he could be a 4, maybe a 5. The biggest problem for Philly and for Jalen Hurts, he needs some receivers. Badly. Our final team in the NFC least is, of course, the Washington football team, who are waiting one more season to pick a real nickname, they say. Washington scraped into the playoffs last year with a crappy 7-9 record, but then they actually gave the eventual Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers a pretty good test in the playoffs. I mean, this team has a stout defense, and they got somewhat mistake-free football from Alex Smith and later Taylor Heineke. Well, now, Washington has signed free agent quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the bearded one could make this team a true contender with that really good defense. Washington fans have to be ranking Fitzmagic like a solid 7, and I completely understand that. Well, for his first 2 or 3 games. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick will do what he always does. He'll throw way too many interceptions, and he'll be more like a 3 or a 4. And if that happens, Washington fans will be screaming for Heineke to get another chance. It's coming. I'll tell you that right now. It is coming, because that is who Ryan Fitzpatrick is. We know him. Next up, we move over to the AFC North, which has basically been a 2-team race for years and years. But that's starting to change in a big way. The AFC North is going to be a very competitive division in 2021. the Baltimore Ravens are up first. And while they didn't win the division last year, they did make it to the playoffs. They actually won a playoff game. But then, as is usually the case, Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson, he didn't look so good in the Ravens playoff loss to the Buffalo Bills, and the Ravens got sent home again. And while Ravens fans would rank Lamar an 8 in the regular season, and then downgrade that to probably a 4 or 5 in the postseason, and I'm sure many of them wonder, has Lamar been getting COVID for the past 3 postseasons? Even prior to the COVID outbreak? Understandable. I know why you would think that. I've seen him play in the postseason. I actually have to defend Lamar Jackson a little bit, because he hasn't had the greatest weapons around him. Well, the Ravens actually tried to address that this season. They signed wide receiver Sammy Watkins. They drafted wide receiver Rashad Bateman, which should help him a little bit in the postseason. So I'm going to say Lamar Jackson should probably be a 7. That feels about right to me. The Ravens should be pretty tough this year. The Cincinnati Bengals have been terrible for decades, but now they have a promising young quarterback in Joe Burrow that they are hoping can lead them back to being a playoff contender. And I mean, Bengals fans have to be excited about the possibilities about Burrow and newly drafted wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, who was a former teammate of Burrow at LSU when they had all that success. So now the Bengals have Chase. They have T. Higgins. They have Tyler Boyd. That is a good young receiving core. But the Bengals lost Burrow last year in week 11 to a blown knee, mostly because Cincinnati tried to get that kid killed with that terrible offensive line. Burrow got sacked 32 times in just 10 games. So he was basically sacked every 12th time he tried to pass the ball. And that doesn't count how many times he got hit. That's just sacks. So when the top offensive linemen were still on the board this year in the NFL draft, the Bengals instead went and got wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's exciting. It's sexy. But it's not going to be sexy if Burrow gets broken in half again. So Bengals fans have to feel like Burrow is easily a 7 in a confidence rating. And he is. But his lack of an offensive line, in my book, still makes him a 5. Because he's playing with one arm tied behind his back. And that's going to be tough to overcome. The Cleveland Browns are feeling good about themselves after actually making the playoffs last season. And then they hang nearly 50 on their arch rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They won a playoff game for the first time since Kelly Holcomb was their quarterback. Browns fans are ecstatic with the Browns' high-powered offense under quarterback Baker Mayfield, which averaged 26 points per game last year. Hey, make no mistake, the Cleveland Browns are accumulating talent. This is a team that should be considered a contender in the AFC, and Browns fans easily are going to have Baker ranked as a 10. I mean, maybe even an 11. And the Browns are going to be tough because they run the ball as well as anyone, which takes pressure off of Baker Mayfield. But that Browns defense is a concern. So Baker is going to have to score a lot of points. And keep one thing in mind. Last year, when they looked so good, the Browns played the 30th softest schedule in the league. So don't get me wrong, I think Baker will be okay, but it might not be quite as easy as it was a year ago. I'll rank Baker a 7 or an 8. I'm not going to go any higher than that, though. The Pittsburgh Steelers are in a bit of a transition after getting smoked by those Browns in the playoffs last year. It looked like quarterback Ben Roethlisberger was done. It seemed like the fire was gone. He was dejected. He was beat up. He was fat.
Man, that's just mean.
We awaited his retirement announcement, but then in the offseason, the Steelers convinced Ben to come back. Now, he claims the fire is back. He says he has lost weight.
Just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
And even though I can't really see any difference, Big Ben says he will attack this season like a waitress in the restroom at Hooters.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I know that a lot of us are just used to giving Ben an 8. He's a big, strong guy that does all the right things. I get it. Steeler fans are going to be in that frame of mind. Hey, Ben is reliable. But I have my doubts. Because that Steelers defense is bad. And so is that offensive line. That's a bad combination for a quarterback whose heart might not be fully in it. I would probably downgrade Ben to more like a 6. Let's move over to the NFC North, which had two teams make the playoffs last season. I know that might sound a little bit surprising, but it was true. This division has been pretty top-heavy, but we'll see if those other teams can catch up. Let's start off with the Chicago Bears, who, yes, did scrape into the playoffs last season with an 8-8 record, which sounds reasonably good, until you remember that they actually started the season with a 5-1 record and then lost 7 of their last 10. Nick Foles went 2-5 as the starting quarterback last year, taking over for Mitch Trubisky, who is now gone. So this should be Nick Foles' job, right? Well, no, because the Bears went and signed free agent quarterback Andy Dalton, and then they drafted Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields, too. So we have a true quarterback controversy brewing in Chicago. Chicago fans will probably be considering Andy Dalton like a 0. But, I mean, he's not that bad. He's probably more like a 5. He hasn't been in the best situations in either Cincinnati or Dallas, so I think Dalton is okay. Meanwhile, Bears fans would easily vote Justin Fields a 10, when, honestly, he'd probably be more like a 4 if he does get playing time this year. The Bears need a healthy offensive line for any of their quarterbacks to be successful. We'll see which quarterback they end up going with. The Detroit Lions are trying to build, well, something resembling an NFL franchise. I know that sounds crazy, but bizarrely, it is kind of true. The Lions fired head coach Matt Patricia, as well as general manager Bob Quinn, and they brought in a more charismatic general manager in Brad Holmes, and then they brought in head coach Dan Campbell, a tough guy that actually played for the Lions back when they went 0-16. And the first thing the Lions did was they dealt longtime quarterback Matt Stafford to Los Angeles for some good draft picks, and they got quarterback Jared Goff. Now, that should help the Lions long term, but what about the here and the now? Head coach Dan Campbell seems to want to focus on strengthening the offensive and defensive lines. That's only going to help Jared Goff. And instead of going with a sexy wide receiver, the Lions beefed up their offensive line in the draft. That should help too. So Detroit won't have much in the skills position department. Goff is going to have to carry a lot of load, and Lions fans are just kind of looking at Goff saying, I don't know, he's like a 2. Well, I would say with this offense, he can be a little better than that. Not a lot better, but I'd make him like a 4. Not great, but I mean, if he can stop turning the ball over, he can at least make the Lions halfway respectable. And when was the last time we really saw that? The Green Bay Packers had a pretty good 2020 season. They went 13-3. They hosted the NFC Championship game, and then it all went south, literally, as they got beat by Tampa, and quarterback Aaron Rodgers made it clear he is no longer happy in Green Bay. They seem to have sorted things out temporarily now, but it's pretty clear these two hate each other. So, does that mean Packer fans should prepare for anything less than a 10 here from Aaron Rodgers? No, I don't think so. Because if there is one thing that Aaron Rodgers is, it is petty. And make no mistake, pettiness can drive athletes to greatness. Hey, Michael Jordan was petty. Tom Brady is petty. And A.A. Ron is peppermint petty.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Which means he will come out this year and he will play to a level 10 to spite everyone. The Packers are still going to be very dangerous with Aaron Rodgers. The Minnesota Vikings disappointed yet again in 2020. They went 7-9 and missed the playoffs. And a lot of that was due to injuries just all over the field. The Vikings got hit hard with injuries. Quarterback Kirk Cousins, he takes a lot of grief, but a lot of times it's really not his fault. Here's the thing. Kirk Cousins needs a clean pocket. He needs to be able to set his feet and look downfield. When that happens, he's reasonably accurate. When he's under pressure, he's usually pretty terrible. And the problem is when his offensive linemen are banged up and running back Dalvin Cook is out, well, then he's passing under duress. Now, here's the thing. Vikings fans tend to just expect the worst from this team. They're just so used to it. So they would rank Kirk Cousins like a 2 or a 3. But if he can get a little help, there's no reason he can't be more like a 4 or a 5. I mean, it is a Kirk Cousins, but it's still better than a 3, right? Let's move over to the AFC South, which is going through a really strange offseason, and it might be a little difficult to predict, let's see if we can figure out the quarterback situations there. First up are the Houston Texans, which are an absolute disaster. After going just 4-12 last year, the Texans fired head coach Bill O'Brien. They lost wide receiver Will Fuller. They lost all-pro defensive end J.J. Watt. And quarterback Deshaun Watson was asking massage therapists to do some really, really disgusting things to him. So now the Texans are embarrassing, and it looks like Tyrod Taylor will have to take the reins while we wait to see what happens with Deshaun Watson and all those pending lawsuits. Now, Texans fans may look at the positives of Tyrod Taylor. He doesn't turn the ball over. He can move a little in the pocket. And they may rank him like a 3. I would rank him like a 0. And it's not his fault. That's not a shot on Tyrod Taylor. He's just walking into a burning building. So how good can you really be? The Texans are going to be a mess. The Indianapolis Colts were feeling pretty good after going 11-5 last year. They have a good young offensive line. And after the retirement of quarterback Phillip Rivers, they made a move to go get Carson Wentz from Philadelphia and reunite him with their head coach Frank Reich, who you might remember had Wentz playing at an all-time high level at one point. And then Wentz injured his foot, and now they are saying he is out 5-12 weeks. First off, that's a huge difference. 5-12? That's a giant difference. Two, the bad news isn't over, because all-pro guard Quentin Nelson also injured his foot, and get this, he's also out, yes, 5-12 weeks. What is going on in Indy? Is Miss Cleo the Colts head trainer?
You have questions. I have the answers.
So now the Colts have to patch things up, and it looks like Jacob Eason could be named the starter in Indy. Now, I'm sure Colts fans will give Eason like a 4 in the confidence department. I'll actually give him more like a 2. He's never started a game. Plus, he is missing Quentin Nelson in front of him. Now, there is also a chance that Phillip Rivers could come out of retirement to play again. And if he did, Colts fans would probably give him a 3 or 4. I would give Phillip more like a 0, because he just can't throw the ball anymore. Indy needs to hope Nelson and Wentz return quickly, or what was a promising season isn't going to be so hot. The Jacksonville Jaguars were the worst team in the NFL last year. They went 1-15. But that did mean they got to take the top pick in the NFL draft. They used it on Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Hey, Jags fans have to be ranking Lawrence like a 7 or 8, even as a rookie. Make no mistake, he's going to have some growing pains. But Lawrence has all the tools to be really good eventually. The Jaguars have some decent skill positions to help him. They picked up running back Travis Etienne, who is very versatile. They signed wide receiver Marvin Jones. They've got Philip Dorsett. They've got Laviska Shenault. Those guys are dangerous. The problem is Jacksonville needs a good, reliable tight end. And their offensive line needs to be upgraded. But I think Lawrence is going to be okay. As long as he doesn't get broken and just get hit so much that he gets gun shy, I'll give him like a 7. And we'll kind of watch his learning curve. New head coach Urban Meyer is going to have to do some of his best work in Jacksonville. The Tennessee Titans won the AFC South last season, and they are in a really good position to repeat again this year. They still have monster running back Derrick Henry, and hey, that takes a ton of pressure off of quarterback Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill's pretty good in the play-action game, but he does also need some wide receiver help. A.J. Brown is a monster, but he can't do it by himself. If Tannehill can get one other wide receiver to step up, the Titans are going to be pretty tough. I think Titans fans would rank Tannehill about a 6 or 7 on the confidence scale, and I would say that's probably accurate. Just don't make him do too much. The catch for Tennessee this year is going to be the fact that their defense is really, really bad. They have no pass rush, and that needs to be improved. But I think Tennessee wins this division easy enough, and Tannehill just has to not screw it up. Let's move over to the NFC South, which won the Super Bowl last year, and it wasn't even by the team that won the division. But can this division stay that competitive? I'm not so sure. The Atlanta Falcons have been steadily mediocre since that whole 28-3 debacle. They seem to find new and inventive ways to lose every single year. Yet for all the talk about quarterback Matt Ryan needing to hang it up, Don't forget, he did still throw for nearly 4,600 yards and 26 touchdowns last year. Now, Atlanta did lose wide receiver Julio Jones. They also lost Calvin Ridley. So in the draft, they went and they grabbed Florida tight end Kyle Pitts, who could be one of those rare freakish talents. Now, sure, the Falcons are probably going to be well below 500 this year, but Falcons fans would still vote Matt Ryan like a 6 or a 7 as far as confidence. And that's probably accurate. Unfortunately, the Falcons defense is a 1 or a 2, especially in crunch time. And don't even get me started on their onside kick coverage.
How dare you?
Next up are the Carolina Panthers, who are in the middle of a complete rebuild because after going to the Super Bowl in 2015, the Panthers just look completely different. They went just 5-11 last year under quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. Well, Teddy's now gone. And the Panthers now have former Jets quarterback Sam Darnold as their starter. Now, Darnold has all the tools. He has a big arm. He sure looks like a quarterback. He's a big, strong kid. Panthers fans will rank him like a 5 before they ever even see him play in a real game. But we know Sam could be broken. Remember this. He was sacked 98 times in his first 3 seasons with the New York Jets. Remember that game in primetime? Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts? Those visions might not go away. And if they don't, Sam Darnold will be closer to a 2 or a 3. The Panthers still have a lot of work to do. The New Orleans Saints won the NFC South last year, but then of course they lost to Tampa in the playoffs, and now quarterback Drew Brees has retired, leaving the Saints in a bit of a conundrum. Do they go with the scrappy runner Taysom Hill, or do they go with the probably better quarterback, but very unpredictable Jameis Winston? Now, I believe Winston will win the job. He's had another year in the system. He should show better in the preseason. And if so, Saints fans would easily make Jameis like a 6 in the confidence scale. The problem with Jameis is that we have a pretty good idea now of who he is. When he's good, he's pretty good. He's like a 7 or an 8. And when he's bad, he's terrible. And here's the crazy thing. It doesn't change by week or by month. Jameis can change from one play to the next. So on some plays, Jameis will be a 6 or a 7. Others, he will be a 1 or a 2. That's just how Jameis rolls, and it won't change this year. We finish out the NFC South with the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their quarterback Tom Brady, and even the most supportive Bucs fans would vote Brady an 8. But let's be real honest. Brady doesn't have the skills he used to. He's even less mobile. His arm strength is fading. Tom Brady is now 44. But the Buccaneers did manage to keep their free agent players. They're going to return all 22 starters. Plus, they get tight end O.J. Howard back from an Achilles injury. Now, the window is closing quickly on this team. But the Buccaneers are the favorite to win another Super Bowl this year. And while Brady's skills aren't what they used to be, we still vote him a 10. Because he raises the play of all those players around him. And that is worth a ton of points right there. Okay, coming back. We still have 2 more divisions to go in our quarterback confidence scale. The AFC West has a chance to send a few teams to the playoffs. How will their quarterbacks rank today? And we still have what might be the toughest division in the NFL to get to. We're going to also get to the NFC West when we get back. So we finish up our NFL quarterback confidence scale as we look at how much confidence each team's fan base has in their starting quarterback. And then we let you know how much confidence we should actually have in those quarterbacks. And we now reach the AFC West. Of course, the AFC West has some of the best young quarterbacks in the entire league playing in it. And then it also has some other guys too. So let's dive into the AFC West right now. Since winning Super Bowl 50 back in 2015, the Denver Broncos are averaging a whopping 6 wins per season. And no small part of that is the fact that the Broncos can't seem to find a quarterback. And this year is no different. The Broncos have a training camp battle going on between Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater in a battle, honestly, of who can suck the least. And it's a tight race. Now, I would prefer Teddy to glove. I would hope he would get the nod, but I worry that the front office pride won't allow that to happen. I mean, they did draft Drew Locke. Now, if you were to ask the average Bronco fan how confident they are in Drew Lock, they would probably feel pretty negative. They would probably give him like a 3 or a 4. That, my friends, is incorrect. That is far too high. Drew Lock deserves a 0, which is the same number of impressive plays that Lock has made in his professional career. 0. Once again, getting more than 5 or 6 wins might be a struggle for this team if Drew Lock is the quarterback. At the other end of the spectrum are the Kansas City Chiefs, who have been the butt of so many jokes for years, since the days of like Len Dawson and maybe like 2 seasons under Joe Montana. But the Chiefs did finally find their quarterback. KC fans would rank their superstar quarterback Patrick Mahomes a perfect 10. And honestly, we can't come up with a reason to disagree with him. I mean, he's athletic. He's smart. He works hard. What can't Patrick Mahomes do? Well, besides beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, apparently. But Patrick Mahomes is the total package. And the Kansas City Chiefs are primed to go to the 3rd Super Bowl in a row. It is Super Bowl or bust for the Chiefs, though. Because that Patrick Mahomes contract is going to be kicking in soon. That's going to make getting a lot of weapons around him like he has now a little tougher. Next up are the Las Vegas Raiders, who started last season with a 6-3 record. They looked like a legit playoff contender, but then the Raiders' defense really melted down and they lost 5 of their last 7 games to finish 8-8 and missed the playoffs yet again. Now, for all the talk that head coach John Gruden doesn't really seem to like Derek Carr, and he doesn't, he still hasn't found anyone else to take over. But this season is going to be very interesting for Derek Carr. Because remember, he has played behind a pretty solid offensive line for most of his career. This offseason, though, we saw a lot of that Raider line leave and go elsewhere. So now we get to see if Derek Carr can still be the man under what is probably going to be a lot more pressure. There's no question he has some weapons. He has guys like running back Josh Jacobs, tight end Darren Waller, wide receiver Henry Ruggs. I believe Raider fans would probably rate Derek Carr around a 4 or 5, and that's probably correct. But this season, we're going to find out if he is better or worse than that. The Los Angeles Chargers are the final team in the AFC West, and for as snake-bitten as this franchise has been, they do seem to have finally found their franchise quarterback. Justin Herbert passed for 4,300 yards and 31 touchdowns as a rookie. Unfortunately, the Chargers finished just 7-9 because, as usual, they found new creative ways to lose games that they really should have won. Now, head coach Anthony Lynn got fired, and the Chargers brought in Brandon Staley to take this team back to the postseason. Now we get to see what Herbert does with all the expectations, because remember, he had none last year. The Chargers have a number of weapons for him to throw to, but their offensive line needs to give him some help, because here's the thing about Justin Herbert. He's not a quick release guy. He likes to stand in the pocket for a minute. He likes to throw it deep. Charger fans will obviously look at him as a 10, and I understand that. I'd make him more of an 8, but let's see what he does in year 2 with higher expectations. It could be a little bit different for Justin Herbert. We reached the final division of the league in our quarterback confidence scale today, and we may have saved the best for last because once again, the NFC West is stacked. The Arizona Cardinals were the surprise story of the first half of last season. Do you realize? Arizona started the year last year 6-3 with wins over San Francisco, Seattle, and Buffalo. But then teams seemed to figure out what the Cardinals like to do. And it changed in the second half of the season. Arizona finished 8-8. In the offseason, Arizona pulled out all the stops to try to improve this roster. They brought in J.J. Watt, A.J. Green, James Conner, Malcolm Butler, Rodney Hudson. So this team needs to improve. I think Cardinals fans believe in quarterback Kyler Murray. They would rank him probably a 7, maybe even an 8. And they might be right. But this year, there will be pressure on him. Because there's going to be pressure on his head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, to get it done or be gone. The Cardinals have spent big money. They want to see a return. And like I said, Murray has weapons. Can he continue to improve? I'll rank him as a 6. We'll see if he can prove he's better than that. Next up is another team that is Super Bowl or bust, and that is the Los Angeles Rams. After going 10-6 and losing to Green Bay in the playoffs, the Rams decided to make a bold move. they ship quarterback Jared Goff and some draft picks to Detroit for longtime losing quarterback Matthew Stafford. They feel like Stafford can take them from good to great. Now, it's hard for Rams fans to get excited. For one, they live in LA. So. But also, Stafford is a career 74-90-1 quarterback. Losing record. So Rams fans will have him at like a 6 or a 7, but Stafford didn't have a ton to work with in Detroit. He never had a running game. He never had much of an offensive system, and he sure didn't have the defense that the Rams have. So I think Stafford is probably more worthy of like a 7 or even an 8. Here is my only concern for Stafford. There is one other thing he never had in Detroit. We've talked about it already today. Expectations. They will be very high this season in LA. That team is built to win it all. The San Francisco 49ers were just in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Jimmy Garoppolo was a young quarterback with a bright future. And now, not so much. Jimmy G will still be the starter going into the season, we're pretty sure. But the Niners are already making other plans. They drafted North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance, who has been impressive, they say, in training camp. So Niners fans are going to go into the year wanting to see the rookie. They're going to be ranking Jimmy G at like a 2 or a 3. Is he really a 2 or 3? No, probably not. He's more like a 4. But he had better bring it this year because his job is on the line, and we know the home team loves a promising backup quarterback. If Jimmy G isn't better than average, they're going to want to see the rookie, and all the heat is going to come down on Jimmy Garoppolo. We finish off our quarterback confidence scale with the Seattle Seahawks, who went 12-4 last year and then got pounded by the Rams in the playoffs. Well, Seattle didn't do much to bring in more talent this offseason, which led all-pro quarterback Russell Wilson, whom the hometown fans undoubtedly will rank a perfect 10. Well, Russell Wilson complained he wanted more help. In fact, he even talked about wanting to be traded out of Seattle. Now, Wilson has monster wide receiver DK Metcalf. He has speedster Tyler Lockett. He has running back Chris Carson, who is dangerous. But the defense isn't great. And the offensive line did get a little help, but they still have some gaps. But those comments by Russell Wilson, they make me downgrade him a little bit, just to a nine. Because there's nothing like blasting your teammates to endear you to your team, right? This might not go so well this year, especially in such a tough division. Russell Wilson, I'm sure, felt those things. He probably should have kept them behind closed doors. Hey, the NFL preseason is underway. And as you can see, we have a lot to look for this year just watching the quarterbacks. And we know the game is much more than just the quarterbacks. I am really hoping to see the NFL have a fun, competitive season. After all the craziness we've had over the past year and everything, let's just have a really fun competitive season. We're going to continue to get you ready for football season here on The Dose, so make sure you're tuning in every week. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will be doing our best to keep you entertained and informed during this dry time of year, and we are getting ready to ramp up for the football season, so be sure that you stop by The Dose next week. You know, we might have to talk some NFL. We might have to talk some college football. We might even have to check in on Major League Baseball a little bit. So be sure you stop by The Dose and be sure to let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing wherever it is you subscribe. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the articles, looking at the videos, listening to the audio. But more than anything else, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Let me show you something.